Hello again, and the proudest, warmest welcome to the Somewhere For Us podcast. I'm Jules Stapleton-Barnes, and this is a podcast about exploring the stories and celebrating the lives of LGBTQ plus people living in Scotland. And for this very special Pride edition, I am proud as punch to welcome Katusha Bento, who co-founded the Free Afro-Brazilian University and currently teaches at the University of Edinburgh, along with the wonderful Rue Jazzle, otherwise known as Rue, the beloved and prolific drag artist, host and producer in Scotland, who describes herself as the painted lady, walking exhibitionist and arty tart. We're talking love, language, pride and joy, because this is Somewhere For Us. Hello to you both.
Hello.
Hello.
We having an amazing reception here that I would like to everyone that is listening to us now. We have cookies and we have teas and we have water and fruits and the hugs and all the atmosphere to make this happen in a very loving way. So thank you. Yeah,
definitely a 5-star rating for hospitality. Definitely.
Absolutely. Lovely.
It's lovely to have you here. Thank you for joining me. And I really enjoyed meeting you. Very recently at the National Galleries event, which was called Not Seeing Straight, a discussion around, a number of things, but they were celebrating some films they've made, which were looking at queer art and language and queer coding. And the word queer itself, we had a good discussion about that as a panel. And as soon as I met you both, and as soon as those discussions started to unfold, I felt really strongly that there wouldn't be enough time for us to talk. So I wanted to bring you into a bit more of an informal space to continue the conversation. And I think a good place to start is me checking in with language. I often refer to our community as a queer community, and I refer to myself as a queer woman. And I'd love to know how you feel about that language being used in this podcast.
So right, in so many levels. Not because I identify as queer as well, but because I identify the queer as a political space for conversations, to do the political work that is required in terms of the struggles for rights, for visibility, but also to hold space for the dream work of imagining something that is becoming. And it allows the flexibility to do that. So I think it's a flourishing space of political acknowledgement of the pain in this struggle, but at the same time, the joy and the love we need to share in order to build something that isn't there yet.
How about you, Rue?
I think for me, I love the word queer because it's vague, which is a weird way of saying
it. I love that. I feel the same.
I think that's why I like it, because for me personally, I don't quite know exactly where I identify when it comes to, especially gender. And as someone who's a drag performer and who does experiment with gender expression and performance, I don't know if I'm necessarily gender fluid or non-binary. It changes all the time. And I think I like the word queer because it encompasses everything. And I think for a lot of people, especially those who fit under LGBTQ plus brackets, things aren't always set in stone, which I think might be a bit confusing for some people, but it does change over time. Language changes, and the way that we express ourselves and the way that we become more comfortable with ourselves can change over time. So I love the word queer for that reason.
Yeah,
and I think it's such an evolving thing. I know and I understand that there are people that still struggle with the word queer, but I think for me there's something about the moving forward and the progression. And it's acknowledging that we all have internalized feelings and an internalized oppression that's been given to us around our kind of LGBTQ plus identities. But for me, there is a reclaiming that goes on with that, using that word. And I cannot separate my sexuality and gender expression. And those two things are so closely linked for me that identifying as a queer person allows me to sit in that sort of non-binary boxed space for my sexuality, but also for my gender expression. And I say that as a cis person, but I do believe that my gender is queer because I am queer. So it's an all-encompassing thing for me. And it opens up a conversation too, which I am also quite enjoying.
Yeah, I think it is exactly that. the fluidity, the flexibility of not being in a box and being in this constant negotiation of who am I? You know, how do I identify and how, what kind of pronouns do I need to use? And being mindful all the time that these negotiations are more relevant to happen all the time than we just put a full stop in the conversation because this is this and that is that. So queer, like, I think it is a rupture or a disruption of all those boxes, including in LGBTQI plus, right, ideas or community. I think it allows us to flow in that negotiation, in that conversation. I love it.
I love the idea of being able to flow.
Yeah.
That's really nice. I haven't heard it described that way. We're moving into the pride part of the year. It's a clumsy way of putting it.
Pride season.
That's the word I was looking for. Season. We're moving into pride season. And this podcast is going to accompany our pride issue of the Somewhere For Us magazine. And in that, there'll be lots of lovely stories about what people are doing to get together and to fight for our rights publicly, take up space and be visible. And all these things that we associate with pride, or for some people they associate with pride. But I'd like a little chat about that and what it means to you both. And I'm interested to hear what your experiences of pride have been. What do you feel, Katusha, about pride?
I think it's about that flow that we were talking about, queerness. Pride, it, for me, is the encounter of loving yourself and finding that that's okay to be you, that it's okay to not necessarily, you know, finding our representation sometimes out there so we can get validation. We can validate that feeling, that that burst of loving in different ways. And yeah, I think that is where pride lies. So sometimes if it feels safe for some people to be in a more reserved space, so be it. I am not trying to make a metaphor here for everyone to stay in the closet here, okay? What I'm trying to say is that for some people, it needs to feel safer to be in a more, I don't know, a closed space. But I think it's also extremely important to feel pride and show and go to the streets and have that and take that the spaces, the and embrace them. So can I just tell a short story of me in Barcelona during Pride?
I've been to a Barcelona Pride, so please do.
So we had a campaign in Barcelona. I am just going to say the name in Spanish because I think it's amazing. It's Si la iglesia te recrimina, bésate en la esquina, which means if the church punishes you, kiss in public at the corner. So the corner is exactly La Rambla in Barcelona has a church. It has a long history. That church has a long history. It was burned down during dictatorship. Wow. But it was the symbolic aspect of Christian oppression against sexuality, including as a repercussion of the dictatorship, as you know, in Franco's time, killing people who were homosexuals or all the boxes that were seen as dissident or something that shouldn't be or exist. So the campaign was featuring me and another friend kissing in front of that church. And yeah, with an amazing soundtrack on the back. It was on YouTube. I think it is still. And it was during the parade. Everyone in the parade would kiss in front of that church because the parade was going to go through the La Rambla. Okay. La Rambla is the very big street that we would pass to get to the to the city council, Ajama Primer. So it was amazing because for me, it was the beginning of an experience of feeling queer as well and enjoying that feel.
Was the feeling the doing or was it being seen doing?
It was absolutely everything because something was bubbling in me as well. And it was an amazing moment that being able to be in front of that church, thinking about myself and thinking about the impact of that, occupying that space with people that felt safe to occupy that space was so meaningful. So I started to understand the importance of pride and being there, like in public, from a whole new level. And maybe that's why it is also part of my spiritual journey, of my, you know, political, academic journey. But I know that being there in that street with those people at that time was something that was really special. And it's part of how proud I am, first of myself, mm-hmm. of having pride, of having queer pride, and of all the collective that was building that. Mm-hmm. And the struggles, of course, that we face on our everyday, being proud of, you know, surviving another day to fight another day. It was amazing. So, yeah, I just wanted to share this. I don't think I ever told this story to anyone. So,
oh,
yeah.
Wow. The memory has ignited your face.
Oh, yes.
It's just, it's lovely to see you really smile through that story as well.
Did you know? Summer for Us is the strategic partner of the Edinburgh Fringe Society. Check out all the details in the stunningly illustrated LGBTQ+ Edinburgh Fringe Guide. It's available in print and online. And check out our socials for news and updates on LGBTQ+ artists and all the shows at this year's festival.
Rue, what's your experience of pride?
I think for me, pride is the most essential part of the LGBTQ+ community. It's been a big part of our history and how we have gained the rights that we have today. And that's why I think it is so important. I've been out as a gay person for almost over 12 years now. And I think I remember around the time that I came out and in years back then, there was that conversation of why do we still have pride? Why is it still important? And I think there had been that assumption that, well, all the rights had been gained for queer people. What more is there to do? I think it's now very evident currently that pride is still very important. As we know that for any minority group, you don't gain rights by asking nicely. It's always a form of protest. And that is why pride is essential. And it's that visibility that is so important that people who are queer are seen in public and are seen showing their queer joy. I think that's so essential. I think for me personally, as a drag performer, pride I now associate with being exhausted.
Oh.
Because it is my busiest time of year. So I'm often up at the crack of dawn and working until very late in the evening. But I love it. I would never turn down working at Pride. I think it's part of my responsibility, I think, as a community leader in a way. That's what you are when you are a prolific drag performer, because drag queens, drag kings, drag performers, artists have always been an important and essential part of Pride. We know this from people like Marsha P. Johnson, Sylvia Rivera, who did drag performances. Yeah. And they were the ones who were integral to the Stonewall protest in 1969. So I know that it is as part of my world as a drag performer that I am part of Pride. I think echoing what you were talking about in Barcelona, I mean, I've had many amazing Pride experiences. Last year, I performed at the first Pride in Shetland.
Oh, amazing.
Wow.
And yeah, it was amazing. I had no idea what to expect. And I think what I found most touching was it was the first Pride that I'd been to where there wasn't a counter protest, which surprised me, because often at Pride events, if you're not aware, there'll often be certain bigoted groups who will turn up with lots of lovely signs with hateful things on them and will shout abuse at the Pride participants. But there was none of that. It was a very supportive coming together of the community. And I think as well, there aren't many queer people in Shetland. So the majority, the overwhelming majority of the participants were straight people, were allies, which I thought was so incredible that it was more than just a queer event. It was the whole community coming together mm-hmm. to show their support for queer people, which I absolutely loved.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's lovely to hear. Interesting that you mention allies as well, because I personally feel like allies, it's a really great opportunity for people to be visible in a queer space who are not queer, and to say that, to opt into that space, you know, and to be part of the creation of that sort of, not only people feeling self-love, but also a community love, an element of support that happens at Pride that makes you feel like you're not alone.
Can I actually echo what you were saying about allyship there? I want to just add that I think allyship is so essential and important. And I think a lot of us don't often think about that. And I think sometimes I've also personally experienced other queer people complaining about, oh, well, the straights have come to Pride. Why are they here? Or even in queer bars where maybe you'll have people come out and celebrate along with us for Pride. And I hear people complaining, but I think I don't agree with this. And I do think that is, it's the only way really that we can like change the way the perception the world has of queer people. I know that with my family, I'm the only gay person. I have one lesbian cousin and that is it. I'm the only gay person in my family that I'm aware of. And I know how important it is that my siblings, my parents, my cousins, whoever they are allies to me. And I'm very like upfront with them and say that if you ever experience homophobia, if you experience transphobia, I expect you to call out. And that's
amazing.
And I'm especially with,
you've had that conversation.
Yes, especially with my mum, who is a woman in her 60s, who's retired. And as much as she's a very intelligent person, I know that too easily she could be taken over by so much TERF rhetoric that exists and so much transphobia with the women that she's around. And she has mentioned to me that her golfing friends have said things here and there, but I've made sure
that... Did you say golfing or gothing?
Golfing. She's an avid golfer.
Golfing. Okay. Oh. For a minute there, I was picturing your mum as a goth and with her goth friends.
She was a hippie back in the day, not a goth.
but golfing, okay, just to clarify.
I bought her a copy of The Transgender Issue, and I was saying, read this, and now she is the biggest trans ally. And in she's spoken to me about, there's been times where her colleagues or her friends had like mentioned things, and she is educated and aware that she can call out. And that's essential. I think that we need to have people on our side because we are a minority.
But what I love is, there was an expectation there because you value yourself and you value your community. This is part of your role now. To love me,
yeah,
is to stand up.
I think we have to have a critical approach to allyship as well. And especially in terms of our community, because for everyone who's listening, I am a Black woman. And by saying that, within the community is important to have allyship about anti-racism, because we're not just here, you know, just talking about a homogeneous, you know, collective. And how do we frame that in a critical way so we don't make it a romantic frame of allyship just being supporters? Allyship is like, okay, we're fighting together. We are here building something together. It's not just about being ally, but it's about being anti-racist, anti-transphobic, and taking a stand sometimes to call out things, and also being careful not to occupy spaces in ways that might be harmful or might take over spaces and voices of those who are already silenced or marginalized. So this is a tricky kind of space to always be in negotiation and being really attentive, ethic, and careful with those communities we want to show up for. Mm. Yeah.
There's a process that I think that needs to happen in allyship where you agree that things might not always be easy, and you agree that it's not enough to just tell everybody, you know, if you hear something racist, stand up and say something. I feel like there needs to be a conversation, a groundwork that's done where you collectively agree to do it. I've seen it work most effectively, particularly in anti-racism, with a predominantly white organization. You have a conversation before you start calling out, which is where you say, you and I, as close as we are, as friendly as we are, you know, with all this history together as colleagues, we might have to call each other out.
Mm.
Let's agree that that's what we're going to do.
Yeah.
And that way, when it happens, you're like, it's one of those moments. Yeah. Okay. But there's a trust, a sense of like, I'm invested in you, which is why I'm doing it.
Mm.
It's not a personal attack, or it's not, you know,
right on.
That work feels like it needs to be done, and everybody needs to be doing it.
And allyship sometimes is sitting with discomfort together. Sometimes it's bearing witness of the pain, you know, holding hand and just letting it out, because there are moments that you just need to have a good cry, you know, and bearing witness. Sometimes it feels like you're doing nothing, but it is super crucial because it's validating, you know, it's validating that you're not crazy. This is actually harmful. This is actually racist. This is actually transphobic. And if we need to name those things, and allyship, I think it's just, being there to validate that, because for so long, that's why I say, and I think it's important to say, especially because people are listening to this, that I am a Black woman. My hair right now, the way it is, it grows upwards, and my eyes are brown, but I'm a light-skinned Black woman. And navigating some spaces, I already felt like, was that really racist? Was that really, like, was that a sexist? So I didn't really know. Having allies next to me just saying, yeah, Katusha, that was not okay. You know, because sometimes you feel like you are seeing things that are not there. They are. And if you ever doubt if you were in a situation that was harmful, probably was. And probably you self-doubting because we are not educated for that level of pride, right? That level of self-love, that when you feel in your gut that in that situation there is something wrong, speak up or ask for help, but don't sit with it thinking that you are crazy.
Hi, Jules here. I know you're loving the conversation, so just a quick note to say that all episodes of the Somewhere for Us podcast are available now. And you made it this far, so have fun exploring. Previous guests include the brilliantly resilient and inspiring Mandla Ray, the heartwarming tearjerker that is the Hebridean Baker, two remarkable queer elders, and the frank and funny queer young people from the Cairngorms. And we started it all with the completely unique and brilliant Eli Percy Blythe. Somewhere for Us is a space for reassurance, inspiration, celebration, and connection with each other at somewhereforus.org/podcast. Or you can find us on Spotify and Apple Podcasts too.
Can I move us on then to joy? We've mentioned it. I felt it from you. I felt it from you in when we met for the event at the National Galleries. There was also tension and, you know, a little bit of frustration and, a sense of a journey that needs to be had towards joy. And pride is often really associated with the concept of joy. And people do have a lot of fun at pride. I mean, you sort of see the photos, people are smiling, they're happy and they're waving things and they're making noise. And so I do associate pride events and the pride season with an opportunity to kind of make and create joy together. Where do you think we're at with that here in Scotland in terms of the potential for our joy as a community?
I think especially right now with the very toxic debate around especially trans people right now, I think it can be hard to find that joy. I mean, I've seen it get worse and worse and worse every year for the past maybe 3 years now. And I think you do wonder, Where is this going? How much worse can it get? And I think as much as that's a very negative thing, I think in another way, it does bring the community together for that cause. And I think it brings the fight together. And I think it does reaffirm the need to have that community and to have that support for each other and that allyship from one queer person to another queer person, and also the allyship too from a straight person. So yeah, definitely.
I was just thinking as you're speaking, how difficult is it to experience joy when you are in pain or you are afraid? I think there's potential for exhilaration, you know, mm-hmm. for moments of like energy release, you know, and things that make you smile and things that make you laugh. But that happens often to people also when tension is heightened.
Yeah.
You know?
Maybe, I think, well, just for context, I live in Scotland for 2 years and a half now. And of course, I moved in during lockdown. So I just wanted to address to joy from that perspective and maybe share a little bit from what I felt. I don't think the lockdown was a particular easy moment for people to sit with joy. But I think that was something important just to think about, one, how we create community and where we are at in Scotland. I am still in search of a community, you know, and I acknowledge that coming here during lockdown is an effect of that, the searching, but the searching not to romanticize like, oh my God, I want friends. It is about the ethics of that community. I would like to see a queer anti-racist community that is like really straightforward. And as much as I'm in the search, I'm not trying to say that it doesn't exist. I see more movement and a more careful, more joyful movement here in the conversations than what I saw like where I was living. I was living in Leeds before. Shout out to Leeds, amazing people, amazing. But it was very isolating in the process for many reasons and also my particular reasons. So for me, understanding joy is also linked with the self-love and the pride. Understanding joy that is something that you can find in yourself in a very mundane, cloudy day, right? Joy of being, of having pride of who we are. And we are who we are with all the flaws, and that's what I think makes us flawless, acknowledging that and just being happy with it. And that's okay. You know, the next day we're going to get it right, something that we did wrong the other day, and we say our sorries and we move on. Having that potential to do that and being proud of that queerness or that ongoing negotiation, I think it's, oh my God, joyful because of that, of those hateful comments that we are seeing nowadays. Mm-hmm. How do we survive another day after so much horrific attacks on trans people, after having so many homophobic, I'm going to say queerphobic, racist, it has so many intersections, including with people with disability within the queer community. And how can we find joy during this moment of violence? And I hope that it's another phase, another wave of violence that we will together overcome. But at the same time, we need to acknowledge that we are grieving to the people who are committing suicide right now because of those violences, mm-hmm. those people who are being killed with horrible violence on the streets. And I'm saying this, I'm sorry to go so dark here. Mm-hmm. I am also a person who offers pastoral support for my students. And some of my students come to me talking about their friends who committed suicide. And this was just 2 weeks ago, and I'm still sitting with this. I'm yeah. still sitting mm-hmm. with those tears. I'm still sitting yeah. with that openness to talk about that and wait a minute. These things are real and mm. they are happening, okay? So we don't make this conversation super romantic about, oh my God, we're super a happy community and we are finding this pride and this love and this joy. We are in constant grieving. How do we do this to be with it, to sit in that discomfort and be proud of who you are becoming? I think it's a task of emotional labor, of mental support that we need sometimes, and it needs to be acknowledged. And that embraces the allyship conversation that we had before, embraces the love. So I just wanted to say that for me, nowadays, being this bubbly person, that I feel joy, I generally feel joy when I wake up, is because I acknowledge all this and try to understand that I can be strength or a tool for us to move instead of just being beaten down. Because I think if I am, they win.
Yeah.
They win if we are, you know, down and down and going and drowning ourselves in those tears that they provoke. Mm. So
it feels like you're talking about joy being an act of rebellion, actually.
Absolutely, yes.
And an act of protest.
Revolutionary.
And I think that's exactly what drag is. It's protest. It's rebellion through joy completely. And I think it's so important to have these conversations, even if they are about quite dark subject matters, because I think for a lot of straight people or cis people who are not involved or who don't really are educated about queer life, they have a very rose-tinted idea of how it is to be queer. I think people think that my life is just putting on a wig and dancing around, but I think they don't realise that the harassment that I faced in my past, or for my friends. I mean, I speak very openly with my straight friends and with my family about the way that my trans friends are treated, the harassment they receive. I speak openly about the things that are happening in the world that I think they just don't realise or understand because they are not documented by the media, by the mainstream media. And all that we have is very negative portrayals of queer people, especially trans people right now. I recently did a talk at my parents' Rotary Club. And I specifically did this. I was not paid for it. I specifically did that because I knew that it would be old white people who are middle class in their 50s and 60s, and they need to hear this. And the biggest takeaway for me from that was I spoke about all these issues, about the transphobia, the queerphobia, all the awful things that are happening right now. They were shocked because they just didn't know about it. Because the media only portrays trans people as paedophiles, as bathroom rapists, as all these awful things that are just complete falsehoods. And I think it's so important to be transparent and to be like open about these things. That's how we can make things better, through having educated allies who are aware of what's happening. That's how we can, yeah, make things better, definitely.
The Somewhere For Us magazine and podcast exist to provide hope, encouragement, a learning space, a window into the lives and achievements of LGBTQ+ people contributing to Scotland today. In issue 11 of the Somewhere For Us magazine, we bring you features on author Douglas Stewart, poet Jackie Kay, Olympian champion Bruce Mowat, drag king Dorian T. Fisk, and Outlander star John Bell, amidst bespoke illustrations and much, much more. Visit somewhereforus.org to find out how you can get your hands on a copy.
Well, that brings me on to talk about moving forward and what you're hopeful for. Living in Scotland, how do you find hope? Where does it come from? What's the root of that? I think you've talked a little bit about that already, strength and being able to be a source of strength for others. I kind of hear that in what you were saying. What are you hopeful for?
Well, first of all, I just wanted to address to the idea of joy and being a Q joy. Being a Q joy that's what brings me hope. So I don't want to be all academic here, so I don't want to present this as a concept.
Yeah, bring it down a notch, Katisha.
No, I don't even think it's a down. I think it's up. Many poets like Audre Lorde talked about the importance of using disruption, right? Or to use anger as the motor for change, for liberation, right? So not to put as something negative, a feeling that we learn how to suppress in ourselves. And more recently, maybe in the past 5 to 10 years, this amazing feminist called Sara Ahmed came up with this term, killjoy, as to incorporate feminist praxis. And I think, whoa, this is nice, right? So the idea is that we are here not to laugh at sexist jokes. I'm not going to laugh at racist jokes. And this kills the joy of the person who is making the jokes, because then it feels like we're killing the joke, we're killing the joy mm-hmm. of these people who feel so entitled and who are so cozy in their positions of sometimes I'm not just addressing to privilege, but I'm addressing to a very patriarchal, racist, mm-hmm. right? White supremacist privilege. By white supremacist privilege, I am not addressing necessarily only to white people. I'm just talking mm-hmm. about, well, we have a prime minister in the UK who represents white privilege nowadays and white supremacy discourses pretty much. So it's just for us to get on that page. So,
and when you kill someone's joy, I've seen it, I've done it, I've experimented with it. And it is uncomfortable because the feeling you get off the other person, I'm thinking of somebody in particular that I've done this with, is they're outraged. They're outraged that they've been put on the spot and that you're not laughing. Mm. And particularly if you're a woman not laughing at a man. Like, it feels like there's an aggression that happens, that you've embarrassed them. And that embarrassment is very hard to sit with, not just for the person who's embarrassed, but for anyone who's receiving that embarrassment by proxy. So, hard to do.
It is revisiting,
good, power. But hard to do.
Power dynamics. Mm. So let's say, and maybe back to the joy, we are, well, for some students and thinking about, sometimes we feel like, are we crazy? Is this person actually harassing me? Some of students that I already had, like, I don't know if I can, you know, have supervision meetings with that professor with closed doors. So if they're feeling like a little bit, I'm not sure, not accepting the terms of that power dynamics is already a killjoy. So you don't need necessarily to put yourself on the spot that can be dangerous for you. You just remove yourself. That is already a killjoy, right? Mm. So you keep safe, but saying no, sometimes it's not a blunt no on their face. It's just, I think I'm going to go over there. I think I'm going to... You also don't expose yourself to something that can be unsafe. Speaking out for some people can be also dangerous because you become an easy target. And I'm speaking about, you know, being the only Black woman working in the department that I work, right? Mm. Sometimes speaking up for me can put myself in a very vulnerable situation. So that's why allyship is nice in those moments. But saying no can be done in a different way. So killing joy is kind of a tactics, it's a praxis, it's an ethics, it's a way to address in a more assertive way how I don't agree with patriarchy and the patriarchal dynamics that this world is still in. Mm-hmm. How I'm not going to do things that I've been asked to do because it feels racist. It feels wrong. You don't need to put a name. Sometimes you don't have that kind of a, you know, understanding. I sometimes don't know if that, was that racist? Was that xenophobic? I'm not sure. So if, even if you don't know how to name it, if it feels wrong, that's where killjoy bubbles start to, you know, ferment in ourselves, in our gut. And this is the joy of being a killjoy. Exactly.
Yeah.
So in poetry, they have been talking about dismantling because you take the mantle of, you know, that kind of a oppressive language and you, it reveals itself.
Mm.
And also you dismantle because you start destroying that structure that has been so much reinforced through so many years. So don't wow. take the responsibility on you to dismantle everything, but we together, I think we can do it. Yeah,
that's amazing. Really amazing.
If you like getting stuck into LGBTQ plus stories, you're going to love the Somewhere For Us magazine. Come and join us as a member and you'll receive your copy of the magazine right through your front door. Exclusive collaborations, original interviews, beautiful illustrations, and your community at your fingertips. Visit the website somewhereforus.org.
I'd love to give a shout out to a new trans choir that's started in Edinburgh. What I love about it is that it's at the moment in the way that the group is formed and the way, you know, its purpose. It's not to put yourself on a stage and sing in front of people. It's not like public performance choir at this stage. What it's about is taking up space and they're practicing singing together as a community, but not for anybody else. It's a trans space and they're singing together.
Mm. And I love that. That's amazing.
It's really brilliant. And I have to hold myself back because in my with my other job where I organise events, I'm desperate to get them on a stage because I'm like, come and sing at this event or come and do this thing and can I book you for the winter celebration? But
one day maybe.
But what I have been reminded of is that's not its purpose right now.
Yeah.
And, you know, speaking to the pain and the violence that's being experienced and how as a community we move forward, I see it happening. I see the hopefulness.
Mm-hmm.
I see the strength in numbers and I see the strength in art and I see the strength in storytelling and having a voice and having space to make noise and to be yourself and explore who you are and for that not to necessarily be a fixed thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's so important. Yeah,
amazing. I think that's amazing what you're saying there about the trans choir and I'm a firm believer that the arts, I think, is so essential as healing. I think it's so important. And I know that for me, as someone who went to an all boys school, I think having my art classroom was like so important to me as somewhere that I could just sit and be quiet and just express myself through like drawing or painting and having a very supportive teacher. And I think that I completely agree. I think that not everything that you create has to be put out into the world and it can just be for you. And I think that's amazing. And I think the same can be done for drag. One thing that I've done in my career that I'm very, very proud of is establishing a youth exchange for young queer people across Europe, where we use drag as a form of healing and also for activism. And I've
wonderful.
So I've done it 3 times now across a number of years. And it's been so amazing and touching for me to see how much the art form of drag can be used for people. And I think it's self-discovery and it's about finding yourself, being more comfortable with your queer self and being fearless. And especially for the young people we've had from Eastern Europe, where those are more homophobic and transphobic and just queerphobic countries. It was so essential for them that they could be free and that they could express themselves. And we've done the exchange in Scotland, in Italy, and in Spain, where we all come together and they experiment with performance and with like makeup and dance and all these different things. And again, that's for us. We're not putting on like a public show. Mm-hmm. It's more about
the journey,
the individual journey.
Yeah.
What is the name of the project?
It's called Dragtivism.
I love it.
Interactivism.
Can someone who is listening to be part of it or know a little bit more about it?
There is an Instagram and a Facebook page called Interactivism. We sort of run it year by year. I mean, we didn't do it during the pandemic for obvious reasons, but we had the last exchange in Spain, and it was in Barcelona, actually, which was amazing. That was in October, and hopefully we can do more in the future.
Any funders listening? What an amazing project.
How can we support?
I guess you can follow the pages, and if there are any organizations or funding bodies that would like to get involved, that'd be amazing. You can send me an email.
Perfect. Oh, that's so wonderful. And I'm also picturing the day of Pride, whether it's in Barcelona or whether it's in Brazil or whether it's in Edinburgh or Glasgow or Shetland. or East Lothian. There's going to be an East Lothian Pride. I'm picturing that day and I'm thinking of what has to happen to give people the confidence to take part in something like that, but also give them the impetus to. And I think it is about the small projects and it is about, or the big projects, and it is about engaging with the arts and engaging with storytelling and exploring who you are creatively, to be able to feel that self-love, you know, to get to the point in your life where you feel safe enough to be public and to be out and to be visible on a day like Pride, because not everybody does, not everybody has that privilege. And I personally, if I'm going on a march, I feel like I hold those people, like I'm not just there for me. That feels really important to me, that when I'm marching, it's like I represent something. I represent many people who can't do that, because, I mean, people who see me on the street marching, they don't care about me, but they're seeing someone.
One amazing activist, and I think we need to celebrate this woman. Her name is Gail Lewis. She's based in London. A black woman, badass. And she co-founded a few organizations in London in support of migrants, in support of women of color, in support of collectives of lesbians. And she talks about a question of presence, how important it is to be present and also to acknowledge, for example, saying each other's names and being here. She of course addresses to that to the importance of talking about black women, right? But I think it's important to be on the street to fill out those gaps in the asphalt, because we are there. And it's this question of presence, because they are not going to kill us all. We are going to fill this places with the joy and the celebration, the pride that we have. This question of presence is like maybe the message for the future that I have. And there is a phrase from one of my favorite authors. Her name is Suzanne Césaire. She was from Martinique. And she said, we need to be in permanent readiness for the marvelous. For the marvelous. And this is what I expect. I'm in permanent readiness for the marvelous.
I'm ready. Permanent readiness for the marvelous. I was also just thinking, as you said that, how that readiness, and then when something feels marvelous and you feel marvelous, how that has absolutely nothing to do with the structures and the systems that oppress. There's all of that. That, you know, tells you how much you can have to eat, how much you can afford, how you heat your home, you know, where you go to school, what opportunities you have, jobs, blah, 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 blah. But human beings have the capacity to be ready for the marvelous. They can experience the marvelous outside all of that.
And that's queer. That's the rupture with all the boxes, right? Because it's not in the anti-racist, not in the anti, transphobic. It is in the creation that we are doing together as a loving space, as a space of joy. I'm not trying to be romantic here. I understand the difficulties. I acknowledge the pain. Is that track that we do Because of that, we create something new, and that's our commitment, our responsibility. And that is how I situate the marvelous from the queer perspective, joy, pride, love that we've been talking in this conversation. So I just, yeah.
Rue, mm-hmm. I want to say thank you to you as a drag queen. This is going to sound really silly, but I've been on a journey with my kind of perception of drag queens and drag in general. And I've really learned loads over the last few years. And, you know, hearing and learning about all these amazing drag cultures that are evolving and including so many people. Something that I feel like drag queens do is have presence in the biggest way possible, often in the most kind of colourful and the most iconic way possible. And so it almost like honey attracts the bees of society. People, ooh, something bright and shiny. And they come into that space and then you can say and do the most progressive and amazing things. And I think it's really clever. Mm. I think it's really clever that the way that sculpting and using color and using shapes and using exaggeration attracts audiences and attracts attention, like the most beautiful flowers, you know, like people look at them and they're drawn to them. But then you have this incredible power to do something marvelous. And I see you do it. I've been watching some videos of yours, even in the most intimate ways sometimes as well. And I just want to say thank you, because I think it's really revolutionary.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah.
I love drag, and it's something that's changed my life, and that I couldn't imagine my life without drag. I mean, I've done it for 10 years now.
What does it do for you now, 10 years in?
Yeah, I mean, I think I completely agree with what you're saying. I mean, I think that drag queens, drag kings, drag artists are the vanguards of the queer community. And I think that, as you see, we are the brightest, the most colourful, the most out there. And I think it does give us that the suit of armour that we have through putting on drag gives us the power to be more assertive and to be the most powerful, like, warriors of the community. And I think we've seen this throughout history, going back to, well, before Marsha and Sylvia Rivera. But even recently, I mean, an amazing drag queen in Ireland called Panty, she was part of the fight for equal marriage in Ireland. And it was actually a speech of hers that led to the beginning of the consultation for the law. So it's amazing how much drag has been part of queer politics and how much change drag has brought to the world. And actually, the funny thing is, it goes both ways. I think that the rise of, like, RuPaul's Drag Race and that culture, I think, has done a great job of bringing queer people and queer stories into many people's lives and learning more about it. But I do also think, on the flip side, I think that it has, maybe because there's so much visibility now, this has led to this rise of transphobia and queerphobia. But I think at the end of the day, sometimes things have to get worse before they get better.
The pendulum is swinging.
That's what happens. I think we all have these conversations where we compare what's happening now to the way that gays and lesbians were treated in, say, the 70s. And I think figures like J.K. Rowling, they are the Anita Bryant of their day. She was a very famous anti-gay rights campaigner in the 70s who really kind of figureheaded lots of, like, anti-queer laws. And it's quite scary how much it is history repeating itself. But what always happens is there will be a backlash, there'll be fighting, and then eventually a lot of these people die. Because a lot of these people who are the anti-LGBT campaigners are older people. And it's the young generation who are much more liberal, who are much more queer. I know that from my siblings who are high school teachers, it's amazing how a majority of their classes identify in some way as queer. And I think that over time, I am hopeful for the future. I think things will eventually get better. I don't know when. It might be longer than we hope for, but I think things will get better. And I think it's about being visible, and it's about, I think, using your platform. And I know that for me, as a prolific drag performer in Scotland, I do my most to share and to educate my audience in any way that I can. Mm. I know that I have a lot of straight people that do follow me or come to my shows. And I think it's, as much as I'm there as an entertainer, I think it's also, I have that responsibility as a figurehead as well to be there as an LGBT inspiration in a way.
I'm just very grateful to you both for your time and for your stories. I know we've touched on some difficult topics. I don't think we can touch on pride and joy without it. I think they go hand in hand, and on we go. Tell me something you're doing in the next few weeks that you're excited about. Is there anything you want to tell people about?
I am going to see my cousins. She lives in Kansas City in the US. She just had a baby. Mm. And I think, it's just a good reminder that new things always come. I am also going to have the opportunity to say my goodbyes to my aunt who passed during lockdown. So I think it's the eternal cycle of life.
Of course.
That brings us the joy, the energy. You know, I'm going to be re-energizing to continue. So, I think it's exciting. And I'm also, doing collective works outside academia to talk about how we build communities in queer spaces that can connect people beyond the geographies of countries, you know? So let's be a little bit more queer, anarchist, anti-racist, and loving in those spaces. So I will be working in that project.
We'll be keeping a close eye on that. Thank you so much. What about you, Ru?
Yes, just working away at lots of fabulous drag across Scotland. I'm starting rehearsals for a little fringe show that's coming to Edinburgh later this year.
Oh, tell us about it.
Amazing.
It is an ABBA tribute show, all drag ABBA.
Amazing. Somewhere for Us are going to have a queer fringe guide, a guide to all of kind of LGBTQ+ fringe shows. So that will be being produced and created, and that will feature, no doubt.
It's called Dancing Queens.
Of course it is. Of course it is. That sounds wonderful. Do you know which venue you're at yet?
At the Three Sisters.
At the Three Sisters. Oh, brilliant. That's something really nice to look forward to. Thank you very much to both of you.
Yeah, thank you so much for this invitation and everyone listening.
You've been listening to Somewhere for Us.
You've been listening to the Somewhere for Us podcast with me, Jules Stapleton-Barnes. And don't forget to check out all episodes available on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and somewhereforus.org/podcast, made lovingly for the queer community and our supporters right here in Scotland. Follow us on Instagram or visit us at the website somewhereforus.org, where you can find out how to become a member and more information on Somewhere for Us. And happy Pride from me to you.